All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I am joined by Locked On Browns host, Jeff Lloyd. We are going to be talking about this Cleveland Browns offseason, their season outlook, and maybe look a little bit ahead to their upcoming matchup with the Atlanta Falcons later in 2018.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
Guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet. Of course, I'm FalcFans on Twitter and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. I want to welcome Jeff Lloyd to the show, host of the Locked On Browns. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd. Coming with us to talk a little bit about the Browns, who have had a very hectic couple of years. And now, you know, it seems like hope springs eternal when this Browns team, but, you know, getting Baker Mayfield, getting Tyrod Taylor, making some major additions on that offense this offseason, and maybe finally Hugh Jackson will win more than one game in an NFL season. Jeff, what are your thoughts? Sort of, you know, it seems like eternally and perpetually the arrow is pointing up for the Browns, but is it finally now where the Browns can be a team that can at least look like a competent, competitive NFL team in 2018?
Well, if you start with and you look at what they did, I mean, you know, completely overhauled, you know, the quarterback position. Everybody gone. You bring in a veteran like Tyrod Taylor. Obviously, you trade Baker Mayfield, number one. You bring in another veteran quarterback, so Tyrod doesn't have to worry about bringing Baker Mayfield up to speed. Baker can work, you know, obviously with, you know, the second veteran quarterback in the room to get himself more in the maturation process. Whereas Tyrod, look, Tyrod's not here to give the job away. You know, obviously for him, he wants to keep playing ball as long as he can. So, I mean, he'd like to hold Baker off. And, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, basically give up his learning time, you know, to help the rookie who's basically there to take his job. So I think they've done a fantastic job there. I really think they did a really, really good job. They made a huge point of emphasis, you know, on the trades with for Tyrod and the trade for Jarvis Landry. They weren't sure what they were actually going to be able to do in free agency. Obviously, look, you know, when you're coming off a 1-31, you kept your head coach after going 1-31. You know, it's great that you have all the money in the world, but, you know, look, guys can get rich and go to winning organizations at the same time. So, you know, they made a point of saying that those two trades, they wanted to basically try to pretty the situation up a little bit, you know, basically to allure what they could, you know, bring in. You've got to like what they did. I mean, you look at a running back rotation of, you know, Nick Chubb, Duke Johnson, Carlos Hyde. I mean, all established guys. You look at the wide receiver crew now. Obviously, you know, Josh Gordon, look, for right now, today, he's still here. He's been walking the straight and narrow for quite a while. You hope that's going to continue. You bring in a Jarvis Landry. Look, he's not a game breaker, but in the role he does, he's a chain mover. It's a nice presence to bring in. You have Corey Coleman, complete unknown, probably going into his third year here. Played in some tough situations with some real bad teams, had some injuries, but here's a guy with a ton of raw talent. He was my top wide receiver in the 2016 draft, so, you know, here we are now in his third year, very crucial for him. You look at the tight end position, David Njoku, I mean, he's everything you would draw a tight end up to be, physically, athletic. I mean, he can do a little of everything. I mean, the one thing that kind of hurts him is he probably needed a lot more reps last year for a team that was going nowhere, didn't get him, you know. So basically, he's going to have to learn a little bit on the fly this year. You lose Joe Thomas. I mean, it's a tough blow because you were not going to replace Joe Thomas in this 2018 NFL draft. There was not an offensive tackle that could possibly lick his cleats. So it was a tough year for him to go. But you understand, look, you know, a guy like him, when the body says no, it's over and you just can't push it any longer. The defense, I do like what they did. I would have liked yet one more pass rusher. It'll be interesting how the selection of Jannard Avery in the fifth round out of Memphis works. He's a multi-linebacker, can kind of do a little bit of everything. Are they going to use him maybe in some pass rush opportunities? They still could use one more, you know, D-tackle type. You know, obviously, you know, Emmanuel Ogbah does some work there. He's a solid player. But and obviously you have, you know, the second-year player in Larry Ogunjobi, who looks like he could be a star. But it's real thin, and you know, you got some guys who hope might be better than they are after that. The linebacking core, you bring in Kendricks. That was a solid group in 17. You bring in Kendricks. It's only even better now. The cornerback crew, you revamped it. You brought in a bunch of guys. Obviously, you go and get Denzel Ward at number 4 overall. You're going to bring Jabril Peppers, play him closer to the line of scrimmage where he should have been all along. I mean, the Browns selected him and basically did the same mistakes that Michigan did with him in his college career. So I understand the promise, but look, you know, it ain't going to mean, you know, it's not going to mean a hell of beans until you go out there and start playing some competitive football and, you know, you win some games. That's the only thing that's going to turn people's eyes. 1-31 is what it is. And for a franchise has, you know, have been losing as long as they are, until some W start showing up, you know, I don't think too many people, you know, even the people with the false hope and really excited, they don't see W's, it's going to halt, and it's going to halt quickly.
Yes, I think, you know, looking at this Browns roster and you look at some of the talent they have, you mentioned a lot of it, and on both sides of the ball, and, you know, whatever you think of Tyrod Taylor, I happen to be a fan of Tyrod, at least in the sense of I think he's a comparable type of quarterback to an Alex Smith, which is a guy that can sort of certainly keep you competitive on a weekly basis, not maybe necessarily the guy that you want to sort of lead you deep into the postseason. But that's really not where the Browns are at this stage. They're just trying to be a competitive team, and they're hoping eventually Baker Mayfield is going to be that guy. But that being said, again, going back to, you know, you look at this roster and you see a lot of good, solid pieces on both sides of the ball, and it seems like that's been the case in previous years, and it seems to just basically boil down to whether or not this Hugh Jackson-led coaching staff is sort of capable of getting the most out of this talent, or getting a lot more out of this talent than they've done in recent seasons. And I'm curious, sort of looking particularly at the offense with the hiring of Todd Haley. I know that was a little bit of a odd move, just given sort of the tendency for him and Hugh Jackson to have maybe strong, some might term it abrasive personalities, and how those guys might mesh in Cleveland. Do you feel like this is a pathway for success for this offense to sort of start clicking this year and be a productive offense that can challenge teams, including teams like the Falcons later this season?
Well, I think this is kind of maybe where, you know, maybe it's a little bit of dumb luck. If a guy like Todd Haley, you know, doesn't have the rep he's got, or, you know, the attitude that he's got, he probably wouldn't have been available. You know, Todd Haley's, you know, a lot of stops along the way. He's always found a way to put up points. He's always found a way to have his offense put up a lot of yards. But, you know, there is a caveat to it. You know, like some guys off the field, Todd kind of gets himself a little bit of trouble off the field, kind of shoots himself in the foot with his mouth sometimes from time to time. But I think kind of what it was is John Dorsey, you know, was basically told, look, yes, you got the ropes here, but we're going to keep Hugh Jackson around for a third year. There's not much you can do about that. So I think his play back to them were, can I have somebody else run this offense then? And Hugh Jackson can kind of just be the guy goes around, shakes the hand, talks to the guys, lifts somebody's head up if he's having a bad day. And I think they gave him that caveat. And, you know, Hugh has stated many times, this is Todd's show, he's going to step back and let him do it. I hope he, you know, at least, you know, works on controlling the game clock a little bit, because, you know, he's had some issues with that. But, you know, you look all around. I mean, you look at kind of the way the wide receiver core ranks out, and you look kind of like what Pittsburgh's doing, you know, last year. You know, some guys with some yak ability, you know, Antonio Brown, you know, a true star. But Josh Gordon could be that type of guy. You know, the only problem, Josh Gordon's only, you know, negative is, you know, availability. And, you know, a lot of times your availability is your best ability. So when you have a guy like Josh Gordon and you're starting it all off from there, and now you're asking Jarvis Landry to be a slot guy, you're asking Corey Coleman to be a number three wide receiver, and it takes a lot of pressure off of everybody else. That was the thing last year. You know, Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, yeah, that's a great-looking one too. But DeShone Kizer went out there almost every week, looked to his left, looked to his right, and it was neither one was Josh Gordon, and neither was it, you know, Corey Coleman. Now you're getting more better athletes, more productive guys who, you know, have abilities on the field. It should work for a Tyrod Taylor. I mean, you know, a lot of people want to make the jokes about, you know, Buffalo's wide receivers right now. Look where Tyrod Taylor left. And now keep in mind, he was on a playoff team last year. And now you look where he's at here in Cleveland on an 0-16 team coming into 2018. And you look at the skill position guys he's got to work with throwing the ball. I mean, you know, guys got to be giddy. So I think you're going to let Haley do his thing here. And, we're probably not going to see a top 10 offense. Let's not, you know, lose our minds here. But you should see a competent team that should be able to put some points on the board and should be able to, you know, move the ball up and down the field. So I'm excited for the Haley hire. I understand. I mean, look, it could be one and done. It might, you know, it could blow up quickly because, you know, obviously Todd Haley had the ability to have things go wrong quickly in the past. But, you know, for what you've got there offensively, it'd be a shame if you were putting that offensive game plan in Hugh's hands every week.
Got more to talk about the Browns 2018 outlook, but I want to plug Locked On Sports, your one-stop hub of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball content. Again, LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. So I do want to talk a little bit about the running back situation, because I was talking about this on a recent episode of Locked On Falcons and sort of the talk that the Falcons have, you know, one of the premier running back duos in the league with Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, and they just drafted Ito Smith out of Southern Miss in the fourth round, and, you know, sort of basically saying that there's really no reason for the Falcons to ever put Ito Smith on the field outside of, you know, maybe some garbage time carries or really, you know, the once or twice a game where, you know, both Coleman and Freeman may be, you know, a little bit out of breath or something like that. But the expectation is that Ito Smith is probably not going to be a significant part of the Falcons offense, assuming, you know, injuries aren't a major issue for the Falcons at that running back position. And one of the things, the points I was making is, like, if you have two good running backs, then the third running back is sort of marginalized. And you look at this Browns trio where they have Carlos Hyde, they drafted Nick Chubb, they just re-signed Duke Johnson. It seemed like all the moves that they were making this offseason with the addition of Hyde and Chubb was sort of with the preparation that maybe Duke Johnson going into his contract year was going to be out the door in the near future. But that changed a couple of months ago when they decided to re-sign him. So I'm curious, sort of, do you feel like this is a thing where they'll just ride the hot hand? Is there one guy that you expect to emerge? Is this a situation where, similar to Atlanta, if two of these guys, you know, sort of step up, does a third guy get marginalized? How do you feel this running back situation balancing out?
I think, well, the first thing where you said basically they made the moves and they weren't sure how this situation with Duke was going to play out. I think they had a number in mind that they were comfortable with as far as extending Duke Johnson. Duke's camp eventually, you know, came to grips and got to a number that Cleveland was a lot more comfortable with. You know, obviously Hyde was brought in, but look, it's essentially a one-year deal on paper. You know, the rumors had come out early before round two started that Friday night that Nick Chubb was getting a ton of love as far as, you know, from the draft community, who were two teams that were, you know, what was one team that was drafting really early in round two were the Cleveland Browns with two selections. So you kind of can connect the dots there that maybe the Browns, you know, obviously had their eyes on, you know, acquiring Chubb. They led Duke for the role he does. And it's actually, you know, and this was one of the things that was kind of head-scratching about the Jarvis Landry addition is they're kind of similar players. I mean, you know, yes, obviously Duke, you know, on paper is a running back, but here's a guy, you know, with 70 receptions. I believe he leads the league in running back receptions over the last 3 years. If he doesn't, he's one or two. He's either second or third, but really good in what he does. But if you got two guys like Duke and Jarvis who can create havoc underneath, now you can let your big guns of Josh Gordon go. You can let David Njoku work that seam, you know, which, you know, obviously, you know, is a dream for the athlete, the type of athlete he is. Corey Coleman can run routes. He has trouble at times catching the ball, had his troubles with injuries. So that opens that up. Duke's here. His role, obviously, is set in stone. I think Hyde kind of got is going to get trumped here by Nick Chubb. If Nick Chubb comes right away and everything comes easy to him and there's nothing that catches him off guard and he shows that he can block and does a little bit more in the receiving aspect, because that's one thing that's kind of underrated with Carlos Hyde, is he is good out of the backfield as well. I'm not sure it's ever going to be a one-man show, but I think it could end up being where Carlos Hyde is a guy who at the end of each game is maybe going to be a little upset he didn't get the amount of reps the other two did. Maybe, you know, with Duke, it's, you know, Duke's a young guy. He's great and, you know, diverse in both aspects, you know, position. And Nick Chubb, I mean, just, you know, he tested extremely well. You know, everybody knows Matt Waldman. Matt Waldman saw Nick Chubb as one of the, you know, the best running back prospects his eyes ever saw. So you got to think you're going to go with the young kids, and, you know, it's great that Carlos Hyde is there, but it could be a one-year stint in Cleveland for Carlos.
Yeah. Let's talk about the quarterback situation. And obviously Tyrod's the starter. The expectation, you know, we've seen in recent years where, you know, one guy is named the starter going into training camp and then some young hot phenom, you know, emerges. You saw it with Oakland with Derek Carr. You saw it in Seattle with Russell Wilson. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of expectations that maybe Baker Mayfield can sort of, you know, come out firing. You even saw it with Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, but that was partially due to injuries. I'm sort of curious, sort of, do you feel confident that the Browns are going to be committed to Tyrod for the entirety of 2018, or is this going to be a situation where You know, with their first two games against Pittsburgh and New Orleans, they get off to an 0-2 start. Is there going to be a sort of antsiness to, you know, that door is going to start to creep open and a pathway for Baker to see the field early in the season is possible?
My first guess is I don't think it's going to be so much, you know, on the team success. Look, if Tyrod's looking good, you look at what this Cleveland franchise did last year. You know, they took a quarterback who they drafted in the 50s. They got excited off a couple of plays in preseason. Everyone in the building besides Hugh Jackson said, don't do it. Don't start him. The kid isn't ready. So what did they do? They threw him to the Lions. And now here's a guy at now just 22 years old, already gone from his first NFL team. And he's off to basically never take a snap again if everything works right for Green Bay, because they have no, you know, obviously inclination of ever playing another quarterback besides Aaron Rodgers anyway. So, but I think John Dorsey, and now you look, he came here obviously over from Kansas City. You know, Kansas City obviously showed a ton of patience. You know, they had Patrick Mahomes. They let him sit. He only played week 17 because it was a meaningless game. I think I'm not saying ideally they want Baker Mayfield to sit the entire season, because, look, Baker came, you know, Baker comes as, you know, a guy who went through 5 years of college. He's already 23 years old. He's played a ton of ball already. So it's not a question of whether or not he's ready, but it's a question not of just making sure he's 100% comfortable. Could it be week 3 in a Thursday night game versus the Jets? Yeah, Baker Mayfield could conceivably be ready. Do I think he would play if Tyrod, you know, if Tyrod was healthy? No, I don't. I would say closer to Halloween, once maybe you get to the mid-season part. You know, first things first, you do want to see if you've got a shot. If somehow, some way they get to week 6 and they're 3-2, you know, God forbid, you know, you're going to roll with what Tyrod's done at that point, because you don't want to let around, you know, you don't want to let down the veterans on the team. You know, you want to keep what's going, and then you see if maybe, all right, now maybe it's time for a change. My guess would be maybe like Halloween, midseason. Tyrod Taylor, he's capable of, you know, carrying the team throughout the season without an issue, but it's really difficult when you drafted the guy, you know, first pick overall, to look at him and say, you know, with the experience that he has. But there's been other guys, you know, Jared Goff went with not as much playing time, number one overall. But Baker Mayfield brings so much to the table and so much of a resume. He's going to be a really, really hard guy to sit for an entire football season.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, sort of Halloween, the Falcons and Browns play on week 10 in early November. And, you know, that's a home game for the Browns. They have a home game the week before against Kansas City. After the Falcons game, they got a bye week. So it does seem like, you know, if you're going to make that transition, you know, those are sort of, not to say those are easy games or whatever, but getting the rookie some of his first starts at home and then having a bye week to sort of prepare him for maybe some other early starts is sort of, you know, it seems like as far as the schedule go, that might be sort of a sweet spot for maybe when we get to see Baker Mayfield's debut. So part of my question is just basically putting feelers out there whether or not I should, you know, really pay attention to Baker Mayfield this preseason as a prep for that week 10 game against the Falcons.
Yeah, and the one thing that's going to be interesting, though, it's also going to be interesting, you know, does Baker Mayfield get reps with the first team in the preseason? If he gets snaps and gets a couple drives with the first team, I think it's going to give an indication of how much they believe in him. I'm pretty sure he's going to go into the season as quarterback number two. I don't think you're going to, you know, when you have Baker Mayfield, you're going to say, oh, no, we'll have Drew Stanton as our number two. I think Drew Stanton's there for one job and one job only, and that's to answer any question Baker Mayfield may have. So, obviously, you know, injury could tip the hat. It will be interesting to see how much run he can get with the starters in the preseason. If he looks good, obviously, it's probably only going to turn the clock up. But I do think, you know, John Dorsey's got the theory of, you know, I'm not going to let Hugh Jackson coaching staff destroy my quarterback of the future like they just did the quarterback of the future that they fell on, you know, the calendar year before.
Jeff, I want to turn my attention to this Browns defense. You mentioned some of the names. Obviously, Myles Garrett is sort of the star, the burgeoning star. You saw flashes of, you know, his excellent ability. You talked about some of the additions they made. They sort of revamped the secondary, got Denzel Ward at the top of this draft, traded for Demarius Werando, part of the swap with Deshaun Kizer, added E.J. Gaines. You know, Randall's going to play more of a free safety after playing cornerback in Green Bay, which you mentioned will allow Jabril Preppers be more that sort of strong safety, playing closer to the line of scrimmage. Picking up Michael Kendricks, they signed a guy in Chris Smith, who was a guy I was secretly hoping the Falcons would target in free agency to sort of be a passing down specialist as he was in Cincinnati on the interior. You have Jamie Collins coming back. You mentioned Ogunjobi as well. This is a really talent-laden defense on paper. Obviously, they have some youth, but they've added some veterans in there that maybe can sort of help solidify this group. Is this the type of defense, is there a level of sort of expectation that this defense has the potential to ascend to a level where it can maybe anchor this team and certainly allow, you know, an offense that's going to be trying to gel early this season opportunities to win some games and sort of keep opposing teams low scoring?
I do believe so. And because what you saw last year, now Myles Garrett and Emmanuel Ogba, they didn't get to play a lot together, but the games they did get to play, the defense looked really good. I mean, Myles Garrett, I mean, there's not enough superlatives you can give the young guy. Absolutely ridiculous athlete. You ever want to have some fun? You search him playing basketball. The guy's out there literally stoning people, and you got to understand that he's a defensive end. And now Manny Ogba, who's a solid athletic guy in his own, you know, own outright. He's never going to be the elite pass rusher that Myles Garrett is, but he looks into a perfect number two, you know, starting defensive end, has all the ability in the world. He actually probably, Ogba and Garrett, they both rush well from the inside. So if you have a couple of guys that can show they can, you know, do some damage, you know, running, you know, rushing against the tackles, you can drop both these guys inside. They have quick steps. It has the makings for a fun defensive line and a fun overall defensive unit. The key is having all these guys together. Jamie Collins is another one who missed a ton of time. He's never really been the versatile player that he was, you know, when he was with Bill Belichick. But he's been solid. He can run with backs. He can run with tight ends, you know, on out routes and flat routes. And it's a nice thing to have in a linebacker. Health for him is key. And then, yeah, you just need more of these guys staying together and being out there week in, week out. And you can't blame these guys once it got to, you know, late November last year where, you know, looks like these guys might be dogging it. Look, these guys are about to go 0-16 and 1-31. Yeah, I mean, it's really, really hard to dig deep down inside and keep that fire burning when week in, week out, you're getting your butts kicked. So you get these guys together, and look, I mean, you know, now they look over, and you got a Denzel Ward there. You got an E.J. Gaines. I mean, you know, Randall brought it in. I mean, every time they look around, it's, you know, every time the door opened, another defensive player came in. You got to be excited about this group. It's deep. If, you know, obviously, if they can keep the health, it should be able to keep them in a bunch of these games this season.
I'm curious, sort of putting it all together, sort of where do you feel like this team's ceiling is? Is this a team that could potentially be a 500 team with all the changes they've made and whatnot? Or is this going to be a team that is expected to still be one of the lesser teams in the AFC? But the simple fact that if they can, you know, 4-12 is a massive improvement off of an 0-16 sort of season. Where do you sort of see their floor? Where do you see their ceiling at this year?
The interesting thing is, I think it's actually, and if you wanted to tie it to one position, I think it's going to come down to left tackle. Sean Coleman looks like he's going to get first shot over there after being the starting right tackle. Obviously, they drafted Austin Corbett out of Nevada. It's going to be key. Look, I mean, neither one of these guys are going to replace, you know, Joe Thomas. Both of these guys can be on the field at the same time, and they're not going to replace Joe Thomas. But the thing was, and Hugh went away from it way too much, you know, when the games got down. This offensive line was running the ball well. They were running the ball very well. Can they continue to do that? Obviously now with a new right tackle. Obviously, you know, they signed Hubbard from Pittsburgh, was a guy they really liked. Hubbard showed well, you know, pretty most of the season last year in Pittsburgh. Now you're going to have Coleman or Corbett. One of these guys is going to need to show what they can be at left tackle. If they can continuously get, you know, 4 yards per carry, which is what they were doing last year, obviously whoever the quarterback is, it's going to make that job higher, and it's going to lead to a higher win total. A lot of the Cleveland fan base, and look, I love these guys. Look, I love the enthusiasm. But for, you know, to look at a team that's been 1-31 the last 2 years and say 9-7, 10-6, I mean, look, I love the enthusiasm, but maybe, you know, enthusiasm is a great elixir, and sometimes you got too much enthusiasm, you're going to get hammered. You know, like you said, 4 wins, 5 wins, 6 wins, that in itself is a monumental cultural shift for this team. And now these young guys, and even if they're only second-year guys or these rookies, you know, Denzel Ward's walking in here, hey, I don't know nothing about 1-31. Look, 6-10, okay, Pittsburgh got us a couple times. We had to play the NFC South. Oh, Drew Brees had our number. Oh, Matt Ryan had our number. you know, and it's just going to fuel the fire for these guys to come back the next season. I 500, I'd be stunned. I'd be absolutely stunned if they if it were to go that far. But like you said, if you get somewhere in that 4, 5, 6 win, as long as the defense can stay healthy and either one of those guys can prove to be a suitable left tackle, you've done yourself a really, really good job, and you've set this franchise up to keep, you know, keep it going and keep everybody hungry. And, you know, whether or not that leads to a head coaching change, if it's a 6-win team, you know, there's some guys, you know, ain't going to pick up the phone call if you're going to change head coach. Oh, Cleveland Browns. No. So, Browns won 6 games last year. Baker Mayfield won 3 games, played half the season. You're going to get some a lot more people interested, and you're going to be able to get some better, you know, build a better coaching staff within the building to go along with all this young talent that you've amassed. You know, that's what you're looking for here. You know, the 8-8, 9-7, you know, 10-6 guys, I love you to death. I'm not sure about that. But if you can get yourself to that 4, 5, 6 number, it's going to do a lot for these young guys and shape this football team for the future.
Yeah, I'm eager to see it. I'm eager to see this Browns team go from being a doormat to being a team that can be competitive again, not only, you know, for that fan base that has been through so much over these last 20 years. I think we've been down this road before where it seemed like, okay, this, you know, Johnny Manziel or whatever it was, this is going to be the thing that changes the culture in Cleveland. And I'm hoping that finally, you know, after, you know, 7th times a charm or something, you might say. I hope it does finally, you know, work out for this Browns team. And I'm looking forward to this game because I do think, you know, not to, you know, we'll see how the season plays out. But I do think this Browns team could be, you know, a little bit spry going up against this Falcon team when at that point in the season where the Falcons may be, you know, looking ahead to, you know, upcoming games. They got Dallas at home the following week. So, you know, this Browns team could, you know, catch the Falcons sleeping a little bit. We'll see how it all winds up playing out. But I do like some of the talent, and I think it would be a fun matchup if the Browns are, you know, build some momentum, build some confidence, and maybe they can, you know, scare the Falcons a little bit. And you know, hopefully when we have a conversation, you know, this November talking up that game, you know, it'll be interesting to sort of revisit whether or not some of these things are working out in the Browns' favor at that point.
Yeah, no, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, I actually, you know, I like what the Falcons did. Calvin Ridley was a guy I was not super excited about. I think guys were painting him as a number one receiver in the league. I never saw that. But I love him going here. You know, because everybody, what's the big knock? Everybody wants to say, oh, Julio Jones, he doesn't catch touchdowns. Everybody ignores the 1,400 yards per year. Basically, just book it, stamp it, it's going to happen. But you bring in a guy like Ridley now, and you know, one thing Calvin Ridley can do is run a route and run it well and create separation. It's going to make Matt Ryan's life easier, the holes for the running backs. I really like what Atlanta's done, and it's going to be interesting because, look, I don't think, you know, obviously, you know, Tampa Bay, I think that's just a ship that's just absolutely, you know, propelling very well in the wrong direction. I don't like anything that's going on there. Carolina, it's kind of hard to figure out exactly what they're doing because they never really want to focus on, you know, the passing game. They try to get off with marginal wide receivers. It'll be interesting how DJ Moore works out there. And obviously that leaves you with New Orleans. And, I mean, you know, can Drew continue to keep doing it? But you got to like what Atlanta's doing. And, you know, you think about a matchup of, you know, Josh Gordon. If Josh Gordon's still around, still running the ship, you think he's not going to want to show up in a game versus Julio Jones and say, oh, no. I want everybody's eyes over on this side. So, yeah, I mean, that's all the makings could be a great matchup. And I'm actually really looking forward. And that's the best part that I like the way the NFL does this is, you know, there's teams that you don't see until every 3 years, and I love the fact the way they do that because, I mean, it just changes so much the dynamic of an organization. I mean, the team could have been crappy when you played them 4 years ago. Then they were good, and all of a sudden, 4 years later, now they're crappy again. I mean, it's just so much can change in 4 years in the NFL, so it's going to be a fun year. You know, obviously, they, you know, the Browns have that. They have the AFC West, yeah? Yes, they have the AFC West, so it's going to be really interesting how all this works out.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. You know, it's funny. I'm looking at the last couple of times the Falcons have played the Browns. The Browns, you know, 3-1, you know, going back since they redid the divisions back in 2002. So it's one of those things. That's why I say, like, you know, this Browns team is a little scrappy because they seem to, even in those years when the Browns maybe not be the best team in the league, they seem to have the Falcons number, even going back to that 2014 game with Brian Hoyer, and you know, I'm sure Falcon fans listening right now are groaning just for me bringing that up. But yeah, so
Brian Hoyer played pretty good that year.
He did.
It wasn't Trinity. I mean, he was like a fifth starter knuckleballer. But every now and then, I mean, he had him on a roll for a while.
Yeah, you put a couple of good drives up against the Falcons in that fourth quarter, and you could have, and probably that game along with a couple of others that year has basically kept him employed in the NFL as a starter, you know, some of these last couple of years. So if you watch that Brian Hoyer versus the Falcons game from 2014, you will come away saying, like, this guy's pretty decent. Why isn't he starting somewhere in the league? And, you know, but yeah, I think, you know, this is going to be a fun matchup, and, you know, I'm looking forward to the season that the Browns wind up having and whether or not they can sort of get this ship turned around. Jeff, let the people know where they can find your stuff and what you got coming up on Locked On Browns in the coming weeks as we gear up for training camp.
Yeah, obviously, you know, for me, covering the Browns, a little bit difficult from my home here in New Jersey to get on out to Ohio. But I do have a group, bunch of my regular guests. They're going to make some time at camp. So obviously we'll have everybody on, some camp reports, guys that are actually there seeing what's going on. A couple players lined up that we should be able to get to hear from before they head off to camp. A couple guys have agreed to it as long as their schedules don't change. But it's been fun. When I first took this back last fall, and part of it is, for me, I am such a huge lover of the NFL draft and roster building and all of that. It was just a great opportunity because, you know, here was a team that was in a huge opportunity, you know, through the draft and needed to build a roster. And now I want to start to see, you know, the fruits of the labor. You know, how is this going to work out? And look, I mean, at the end of the day, it's time to start winning some games. But, guys, check the Locked On Browns Twitter account. I keep it as a follow-back account. It's the best way. You know, my listeners have done a great job actually getting me guests, giving me suggestions for guests, things they want to hear. Follow me personally, at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd. Locked On Browns, iTunes, whatever your podcasting, you know, wherever you listen to your podcast, go ahead and look us up there. Obviously, all of our Locked On shows are pretty much all across the board. If they're not and they're somewhere where you want it, please let us know. We'll let our boss know and he'll get it there too. But, you know, Aaron, great catching up with you, and I'm definitely looking forward to November.
Absolutely, man. I look forward to talking with you, and we'll see what this season, you know, shakes out for both teams. It'll be interesting if maybe, you know, the dynamics might be a little bit flipped where the Browns are, you know, running full steam and the Falcons are a little bit, you know,
so that is the best part about the NFL is, you know, I mean, you can pick three teams that everybody says they're going to be so good. And look, I mean, injuries have a lot to do with it. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out and the players and the coaching staff fall apart. And then there's three teams where everybody, oh, my God. And then the next thing you know, they're playing in primetime week 16 and we're all sitting here scratching our heads looking like a bunch of idiots. But that's what makes it so much fun.
Absolutely. Any given Sunday, as they say.
You got
Jeff,
it,
I appreciate it. I look forward to talking with you in a couple of months, man.
Absolutely, buddy. What was it? What did Adam Schefter put out today? Was it 50 days? Is it 50 days? Thank God, 50 days away.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get to see the Falcons first out of anybody. So,
right.
You know, yeah, Thursday night opener against the Eagles. So,
hopefully. That's too shabby.
Yeah. All right, man.
Think about it. And you guys should have won that playoff game.
You don't have to tell me that, man. I know.
That still chaps me because here, I mean, you know, in this area, the Eagles are not liked. Giants fans, Jets fans, they'll get along. Everybody kind of get along. Nobody likes the Eagles fans. And I still just remember sitting here watching that, and I was just like, well, what are you calling? These are the worst four calls I've ever seen in my entire life. Just tough. But, hey, you know, got to give credit to Philly because they didn't just win that game. They won the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah. And they did so in a very dominating fashion to a certain degree. And it has only made people here in Atlanta a little bit more questioning about, you know, maybe
yep.
We could have done this.
What could have been? So, what could have been?
That seems to be the question with all Falcons postseason losses these last couple of years. So, yeah, we'll see what if anything changes in 2018 or 2019. Appreciate it, Jeff, man.
No problem, Aaron.
Look forward to doing it again. All right. Jeff, I'll send you this audio probably within an hour or so.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I mean, I'll probably put up in the next day or so because, you know, I mean, let you get your run and then we'll go from there. All right, bud?
Okay. All right, man.
All right, Aaron. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
All right. Have a good one, buddy.
Ugh. Well, guys, you know, we've wrapped up our AFC North series, and it's interesting because when we talked to Tony Cirino, host of Locked On Steelers, we talked about Le'Veon Bell's contract situation. And, you know, given sort of what happened Monday with the deadline, you know, if you guys listened to that episode, then you sort of, you know, sort of had a heads up of what was going to, what potentially could have gone down, and sort of you're seeing the different things. You're seeing the various reports about how much money Le'Veon Bell turned down, and certainly the speculation whether or not, you know, that was a poor decision on his part, and those sorts of things. But I just wanted to play you a clip of sort of Tony's thoughts on that, and we'll leave it at that, and that'll sort of play us out. I should let you guys know that tomorrow will be a Q&A, so if you're listening to this and you haven't sent in your questions, do so as soon as possible, because I will be recording that at some point, you know, Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening or something like that. So send in those questions, and if you don't get to all of them on that show, then we will continue what we haven't done in quite some time, which is a leftover mailbag over on LockedOnFalcons.com. If you want to submit your questions to me, the best way of doing so on Twitter is at LockedOnFalcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. But if you send them over to FalcFans and indicate that it is for the podcast, I will definitely check that out. You can also use Facebook and hit us up on the Locked On Falcons Facebook page, as well as you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, or you can check out any of the content we have at FalcFans.com or LockedOnFalcons.com, where the podcast is posted daily, and you can leave a comment there as well. So those are your ways of getting at me for the Q&A and in future episodes. Next week, we will be sort of pivoting and really sort of dialing in on sort of season expectations, which has been something I've been talking about in recent episodes, but we'll bring on some guests to sort of guys their perspectives on some of the storylines and issues that the Falcons will be facing heading into training camp and this season, rather than simply, you know, me, you know, waxing poetic for hours on end about, you know, expectations and all the sorts of things that I tend to go on a rant. But that all being said, guys, I appreciate you listening, and we'll listen to what Tony had to say about the Le'Veon Bell situation in just a moment, and then talk to you guys tomorrow.
Hey everybody, it's Tony Cirino from